Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My name is Barack Obama of the Moneygall Obamas, and I've come home to find the apostrophe that we lost somewhere along the way. Now, I knew that I had some roots across the Atlantic, but until recently, I could not unequivocally claim that I was one of those Irish Americans. But now, if you believe the Corrigan brothers, there's no one more Irish than me.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thought that Obama had hit a low, but I never knew the man would go this low. Now, what I'm about to say to you has to be seen in the context of reality as opposed to the political correctness of your sick ears and mind. Obama is playing the race card. For the last several years, we've been told he's the first black president. Now that he's found out through his handlers that he's alienated most of the working class white voter, he suddenly discovers that his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather on his mother's side comes from Ireland, and he claims he's an Irish American. I've got to read you from James Dellingpole of the London Telegraph, who put it exactly the way it is, when he writes that Blair and Obama are snake oil salesmen. Both play the acceptable... Did you hear this? Both play the acceptable, moderate-seeming public face of a regime chock-full of communists, class warriors, single-issue rabble-rousers, malcontents, and eco-loons. Did you hear this? Now he's in Ireland? Now he claims that he's Irish? And he writes, except when he's in Africa, of course, when he disappears into the dry ice and reemerges father of a thousand warrior sons, keeper of King Solomon's mines, barehanded slayer of lions, undaunted victim of the evil colonial British Empire. And when Obama's in the Middle East, he is al-Barack Hussein Obama, protector of the holy shrine, smiter of the kafar, lion of the desert, tent-loving aficionado of the oversweetened coffee, restorer of the caliphate. He says Tony Blair used to do this trick too, his accent mutating from broad Glaswegian to genteel Edinburgh, to Mummerset, to Estuary, to Richard E. Grant, to soft London grime, often in the course of one Downing Street reception, the better to persuade his target audience that he was their kind of guy. And it is, of course, the hallmark of an unutterable charlatan. He says, I've argued before that Barack Obama and Tony Blair have an awful lot in common. Both are lawyers, both are snake oil salesmen. Both claim to be postpartisan and third way and consensual. Both play the acceptable, moderate-seeming public face of a regime chock-full of communist class warriors, single-issue rabble-rousers, malcontents, communitarians, and eco-loons, hell-bent on destroying every last vestige of what once made their country great. He goes on in his article, James Dellingpole does in the Telegraph UK, and he says this, Obama is just now doing what all bullies and losers start doing when they realize how unpopular they are and that everyone is abandoning them. They suck up to anybody and everybody. They whore themselves piteously before enemies they once considered beneath their contempt. By all means, let us enjoy watching Obama smarm and grovel and ingratiate himself like some presidential Uriah Heep. But for heaven's sake, let us never give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a cold fish and would certainly never show any mercy towards us were the roles to be reversed. The article's up on michaelsavage.com. Other articles in the news today are these. The failure of the Republican field. If you think I'm going to play a Rush Limbaugh and talk about an unknown governor named Mr. Paul, you're mistaken. I am not interested in an unknown man named Paul who cannot win any more than I'm interested in Newt Gingrich or any of the other could not wins. There are other stories that I will talk about, including Rat Boy. Remember Rat Boy, John Walker Lind? Remember Rat Boy who was found in the rubble of with the Taliban? Remember who he is? Well, his father came out and wrote an editorial for the Old York Times, the Stalinist broadsheet in New York City, pleading for mercy. And he said that now since Osama bin Laden is dead, is it time to release his son? He said, bin Laden's gone. Can my son come home? Now, his son was caught red-handed fighting for the enemy Taliban. And I'm asking you, is it time to release Rat Boy? Is a traitor like Rat Boy capable of rehabilitation? Do you fear that Obama will commute this dangerous rat sentence? Do you think bin Laden's death is an excuse to let dangerous terrorists go? And do you believe John Walker Lind's treatment in jail has been too favorable? 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls on these and other topics right now on the Savage Nation. Let's begin on WOR in New York. Carol, what's your topic? Go ahead, please.
Yes, my point is this, and it's been frustrating me all weekend, Michael, that the money that what Obama is trying to attract and to keep and to pay back with his horrible comments about the 67 borders. He doesn't care about the Jewish vote.
Right. On Wednesday, he said the Jews should commit suicide and go back to the 67 borders. That was on Wednesday. On Thursday, he backtracked, and on Friday, he said the exact opposite. What he meant was not the 1967 borders, but the 1697 borders.
This is payback for the $45 million that was raised by telephone fundraisers in the West Bank prior to the 2008 election. This is payback, and this is.
We know he's a lying politician, but what else is new? It's just that he's so obvious as a lying politician. What shocks me is that the brilliant Jewish people keep voting for him. 92% of American Jews fell for this imposter's charade last time around. Do you think that the Jews are going to learn from history? What have they learned from history before?
Nope.
When have the Jewish people, they're going to vote for him again, no matter what he does to them? I tried to tell you this on Friday. No matter what Obama does, because he's a Democrat, they're going to vote for him. Because no matter how rich Jews become, they carry around the immigrants' mentality that the Democrats are good for the Jews. Do you understand that? I don't know how else to say it.
But this is.
I said all I want to say about it. I don't want to talk about Israel anymore. How do you like that? Don't bring up Israel. I'm sick of it. Let Israel worry about Israel. What has Israel done for you lately? Ron in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, what the heck is he doing over in Ireland when Joplin is in total destruction? He ought to be back here with the Americans.
Well, of course he ought to be here, but that's the American homeland. He got to, in order to make sure that the stupid white male worker says, well, he ain't so bad, he's one of us. This is about the stupidest act I've ever seen portrayed on the presidential stage. I mean, I don't mind him going to Ireland, but after beating us to death with radical black rhetoric, with all the rhetoric from the black liberation theology of Reverend Wright, after beating us up with that for years, now suddenly we're supposed to relate to that? He's playing the race card.
He is a racist by all means.
Yeah, I didn't say racist. I said he's playing the race card. That's what I said. Don't put words in my mouth. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Is Obama playing the race card by going to Ireland is the question. I guess we'll have to put it in talk radio ease. I want to say something before I take my first break on this Monday. I watched a movie last night with Robert De Niro and Bruce Willis and a couple other people. And I don't know what it was called. It was like an unknown movie from 2008 to 2009 called What Just Happened or something like that. I never heard of it. And De Niro being such a great actor, I like to watch him in anything, even though he's a far left guy. I pay no attention to his politics. I realize he's simply a dyed-in-the-wool left winger because that's the way these people are in Hollywood. So he plays a Hollywood producer who has to get a movie made, and Sean Penn, one of the most dangerous people on the planet, perhaps the most un-American, anti-American actors to have ever appeared in history, is in the movie. And they show you what a parody of what really goes on in Hollywood to make a movie, and it's all about money. It's only about raising money. It's only about raising the money to make a movie. And it's a business, which is the good news. Nevertheless, what you see by watching this is that every one of these men, with all of their fame, with all of their power, with all of their fortune, I believe would love to have a talk radio show like I do. I believe that at the end of the day, when they reach a certain age and they've had all the women, all the money, all the power, all of this, all of that, you know what they want? They want to be taken seriously. Nobody takes Robert De Niro seriously. Nobody takes Bruce Willis seriously. Everybody laughs at Sean Penn because they know he's a deranged drug addict. Everybody laughs at them. They know that they're just marionettes of the Hollywood machine. And you know what they want? They want what I have, only they can't have it because they haven't spent the time in the trenches establishing a reputation for truth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Michelle and I visited Montegal, where we saw my ancestral home and dropped by the local pub. And we were.
Can you believe the nerve of this man? Can you believe the audacity of this phony president, this imposter? He visited his ancestral home in Ireland. You know, there is a limit to the stupidity of the American people. I mean, Mencken said no one ever went broke underestimating the stupidity of the American people. But I believe Obama has taken this to an absolute new low. Does he actually think that the 35 to 40 million Americans who trace their ancestry to Ireland are going to suddenly say, you know what? Although he has espoused every anti-American sentiment known to mankind in the last couple of years, although he sat at the feet of a rabble-rousing anti-white, anti-American preacher for 20 years, although he's shown his contempt for the middle class and the working class and the white male in particular, well, he ain't so bad after all, because after all, he's gone home now to his homeland in Ireland. Who would come up with such an idea? Now, combined with this absurdity is the absurd editorial in the New York Times by the father of Rat Boy, where he writes, "Bin Laden's gone, can my son come home?" This was a boy who came from a very troubled family. His father had left his mother and ran off with another man. No doubt that affected the boy, and he became a Muslim. The mother became a Buddhist, and he became a Muslim, the boy did. But it wasn't bad enough that he eschewed the religion of his father and of his mother. He then went to Islam, which unto itself could be okay. But then he joined Al-Qaeda. He joined Al-Qaeda. He was on the war field when he was captured with an AK-47, and he was thrown in prison for treason for 20 years. He's fluent in Arabic. And now, of course, his dad is going to his friends at the New York Times saying, now that Bin Laden's gone, can my son come home? I have a simple answer for you, Mr. Lind, and all of your flack communist lawyers here in the Bay Area. Here's my answer. You're saying, now that Bin Laden's gone, can my son come home? Mark this down, Mr. Lind. Here's my answer. He can come home when Johnny Michael Spann comes home. How's that? When Johnny comes marching home, your son can march home. But you see, Johnny can't come home. You see, Johnny Michael Spann was killed. Johnny Michael Spann was another young American. He was a CIA officer. And he was shot and killed in a shootout where your rat boy's son was found hiding in a cellar like a dirty, filthy, wet rat. Your son should rot in jail for the full 20 years. In my opinion, he should have been given the death penalty. But then again, I'm not president. And with Barack Hussein Obama, my guess is you've got a good chance for commutation of Rat Boy's sentence. I'll take the American people's pulse right now. Mitch in New York, WOR, should Rat Boy be released?
Listen, you just said it all, so I don't know what I can add to that, but I spent 21 years in the military. I fought for this country. I went to a benefit 2 nights ago for a corporal, a lance corporal in the Marine Corps that lost his 2 legs to an IED. This guy should rot in hell for the rest of his life. He's worse than Bin Laden. Bin Laden at least wasn't an American. This was an American who turned his back on this
country. Yes, this is a turncoat rat of the lowest order, which is why we call him Rat Boy. But the father's arguing that he served enough time, 7 years or whatever, and he should be let off now. So my answer is simple, and I'd like all of you to remember it. Yes, Mr. Lynn, your son can come home when Johnny Michael Spann comes home. Does that work for you, Mitch?
They should put Mr. Lynn with him till Johnny comes marching home, till every American comes marching home that served this country.
I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, he should have been given a firing squad when he was found in there. That's where he should have been. He should have been shot on the field by the American troops after a summary trial. He ought to be glad that he's got 20 years. After, because he's going to get out after 20 years, he's going to have the world waiting for him with the communist frontier in America. They have the skids greased for him already. Pat in New York, your opinion. Should Ratboy come home, yes or no?
Well, if he's converted to Christianity while he's in prison, maybe there's a chance for him.
You mean that if a person's a Christian, that automatically exonerates them from a crime of treason?
No, I'm just saying at least there's hope that he's changing.
I wouldn't say that that would be anything. You know how many prisoners suddenly find religion in prison? You know, the jails are filled with false preachers. They find the Christians, Christianity. The Jews become Orthodox Jews and start shuckling and jiving with taluses to get out early. The Christians, the crosses grow bigger by the year. The Muslims, the prayer rugs get bigger. And the minute they get out, I somehow think that the religious fervor seems to diminish, in my opinion. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Bin Laden's gone. Can my son come home? You know, I took a chance with this topic because I didn't know how many of you even remember John Walker Lind, Rat Boy. But when I saw that the father, and I would expect the father to keep doing this, I don't have anything against Franklin. I mean, if it's his son, he can keep asking all he wants. And of course, with a communist in the White House and a Muslim sympathizer in the White House, this is his time, especially since he has one of the most high-powered attorneys in San Francisco known for his communist leanings working for him for free. There's no question that they're working around the clock through their Hollywood contacts to get Rat Boy free and probably get him a big fat contract on HBO.
Savage. For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com.
All right, so we got a couple of balls in the air on the Savage Nation. One is pretty, let's say everyone knows that Obama is in Ireland trying to play the race card now after beating us up with black liberation theology for years. Suddenly he's discovered his Irish roots and he went to his homeland, which I think is beyond comprehension stupid. I don't know what he's doing in Ireland. I cannot believe that his handlers are that stupid that they would think that the white working guy is suddenly going to love Obama because he found out that his great granddaddy on his mama's side. I don't care about the man's race, by the way. His politics are what I care about, and they're immoral. Obama's politics are immoral because they're anti-American. They're not even un-American. They're anti-American. He's anti-capitalist. He's anti-individualist. He's anti-individual freedom. Everything the man stands for is anti-American. I don't give a rat's behind where his great-grandfather came from, whether it's Kenya or Ireland. It doesn't matter to me. But it just shows you how cynical this administration is that he thinks that you're that stupid. But then again, what can I say? If they elected him the first time, I figure, and the Republicans have thrown already, the Republicans are on the mat already. Don't you understand? The Republicans are down on the mat already. It's over. I told you how the game works. It's painful for me to repeat it. 8 years Repub, 8 years Dem. 8 years Repub, 8 years Dem. 8 years Repub. We just had 8 years of Repub. It's going to be 8 years Obama. Don't you understand how the game works? You actually think there's an election? There's no election. The Republicans already threw the towel in. Yeah, they're going to run Romney up there again for a while. He'll get some payoff in the form of some benefit, and that'll be the end of it. So it's disgusting to see the kind of system we've devolved into where there's virtually no choice. Don't call me about him or the doctor, please. What's his name? Who thinks that we should sell a gold in Fort Knox? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, michaelsavage.com. We're also talking about, on the greatest talk show in the history of America, the American Taliban, who I affectionately call Rat Boy, John Walker Lind, whose father wrote an editorial in the New York Times, saying that now that Osama bin Laden's dead, it's time for them to release Rat Boy. I say, yeah, sure, President Obama, release Rat Boy. and he can come home the day, you know who comes home, right? Yeah, you can release him. Absolutely, it's time to release him. He can come home when Mr. Spann, when John Michael Spann comes home. When Johnny comes marching home again, Rat Boy can come home again, as far as I'm concerned. I want to play for you a little history here. I'm going to play three clips of American Taliban John Walker Lynn's parents going back to 2007. First, Mama Taliban, Marilyn Walker.
Given the temperature in the country at the time after 9/11, I could understand it. People were angry. They were confused. There was a lot of pain.
Here's the guy to blame.
Let's blame him. I mean, it's not rational. I don't think it was a rational thing, but, you know.
Let's stop right there. Now, here's the mother who left her husband, converted to Buddhism, and I don't have to tell you what an American is who becomes a Buddhist. Americans are to Buddhism, I'll finish the analogy another time. They think that by putting their hands together and sitting in a mat, on a mat, they become a Buddhist. Ask a real Buddhist what they think of Americans mocking Buddhism, and you'll understand what I think about most of these frauds. But she says, you're stupid. You were angry. You were confused by 9/11. You really didn't know who did it. You were full of pain. It was irrational to blame her poor son. Although he converted to Islam, he took terrorist training, he was found in a firefight with an AK-47 hiding like a rat in the bottom of a basement. You were confused, and it's irrational to blame him because he wasn't a real traitor. Now listen to what the rest of the clip has. You won't believe this gold that we found.
Didn't have anywhere else to put it.
But it was like a nightmare for us as a family, because we know John. We know he's not anti-American. We know he doesn't have any sympathy for terrorism. And yet here he stood accused of these things in the public eye, in the media.
Hold on, let's stop for a minute. You know, Mr. Lind, you can't mean what you just said. He doesn't support terrorism, and yet he's accused of these things? Well, let me remind you of something, Mr. and Mrs. Lind, about your wonderful son who grew up in Marin County, whose brain was poisoned by the liberalism of the schools out here. Your rat's son attended a training camp for military training. Your rat's son traveled to the Al-Farouq training camp, a facility associated with Osama bin Laden. Your rat's son in June of July of 01 remained at the Al-Farouq camp and participated fully in its training activities, including courses in weapons, orienteering, navigation, explosives, and battlefield combat. These facts that I'm reading you come directly by Lind and his attorney that he signed on his sentencing. He said, having sworn allegiance to jihad in or about July or August 01 after completing his training, the defendant traveled to Kabul, Afghanistan to assist the Taliban. In or about July or August 2001, the defendant carried an AKM rifle issued by the Taliban while he traveled together with approximately 150 non-Afghan fighters from Kabul to the front line in Taqir in northeastern Afghanistan. Between about September and November 2001, John Walker Lynn Ratboy, his defendant's fighting group, was divided into smaller groups and rotated in 1 to 2 week shifts in the Taqir trenches opposing Northern Alliance troops. In other words, Ratboy admitted to having trained in a camp run by Osama bin Laden and having fought with the wonderful Taliban, fought with them. The son also admitted he carried an AKM rifle and grenades. And yet in 2002, his demented father compared his son to Nelson Mandela, which just shows you how little the lawyer's words can be trusted. While Franklin writes that his son is intelligent, spiritual, good-natured, he expects you to believe his son was so clueless that he did not really understand that he was training under and fighting for the man who ordered the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And apparently, the Lynn people apparently think that John Walker Lynn had no responsibility in warning U.S. forces about the prison attack that led to the death of CIA operative Johnny Mike Spann. Spann's father disgraces the name Truth. And I think that, yes, your son should come home. As I said, sure he should come home. When Michael Spann comes home, he can come home. And now to lighten it up a bit, let's go to the callers. Marilyn in New York, go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to say I don't see what one thing has to do with another. The death of bin Laden is the death of bin Laden. So this guy committed treason, and he should, unfortunately, I feel...
I understand, but the writers for the New York Times as you understand, they're liberals, and liberalism being a mental disorder, they have no logical capacity. So they let the father write an editorial in the New York Times, Bin Laden's son gone, can my son come home? Like, duh. What does that have to do with each other?
Exactly. Well, one thing doesn't have to do anything with another. The guy committed treason. As far as I'm concerned, he should have been killed. He's lucky he's alive. And, you know, the American public is not completely, like, we do, not all of us have a short memory, put it that way. Some of us have very long.
By the way, what people should know is that, you should know this, in a plea deal in October of 2002, the U.S. government dropped its most serious accusations against Lynn, including terrorism and conspiracy to kill Americans. All John acknowledged was that he had aided the Taliban and carried weapons. Oh, that's all he did? That's all he did? And he accepted a term of 20 years imprisonment? He accepted it? Your rat son should have faced the firing squad. He should have faced 20 Americans who lost their legs in Iraq. That's what he should face. He should face 20 men in a wheelchair and don't have legs anymore, you rat bum. You know better than your son. 1-800-449-8255. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe I'm a little too harsh. Maybe I'm out of touch with the times. Maybe I don't see things in a sympathetic light the way Robert De Niro would, or Sean Penn would, or Bruce Willis would. Maybe I don't see the world through the eyes of the turd faces of Hollywood, who hate this country, although they've made fortunes off the mentality of the stupidity of the American people. Maybe Robert De Niro would give him a little free ride. Certainly Sean Penn would. Certainly John Turturro would, whatever he is. Certainly Stanley Tushish would. Certainly they all would. They all stand for the same anti-Americanism. I'm only reading their names because they're in this movie I saw last night, which is very funny, actually. But predictable. The whole thing was predictable, but funny for another reason. Cost $25 million to make this dreck. All right, now I want to play for you. I'm going to start to play for you when I come back. A Day in the Life of Johnny Jihad and Temescal Heist. Should we start that, guys, and cut it off in the middle and come back with it? I did this at the time that Rat Boy was sent away a couple of years ago, and it's a parody. Remember who this kid was? Grew up in Marin County, California. Mother was a Catholic. Father left her for another man. Mother converted to Buddhism. Son converted to Islam. I think it was at a Sufi mosque in Fairfax, incidentally. If I'm not mistaken, I think old Johnny Boy learned about the beauties of Islam from a mosque in either Mill Valley or Fairfax. I'm not quite sure. And then he went a few further steps than that. So here we have A Day in the Life of Johnny Jihad from Michael Savage.
This is Graham Hancock on special assignment with Michael Savage reporting from the field. Today we're examining the question of what happened. What created Johnny Jihad? What were the forces that molded this unfortunate man's life? Here, we attempt to demonstrate what happened. The reasons.
We now take you to the imaginary home of the boy Taliban in A Day in the Life of the Boy Taliban, Johnny Jihad, Fairfax, California, a town without pity. And we imagine a scene such as this may have occurred. Little boy Taliban has just soiled his diaper. He has then picked up the diaper and said,
doo-doo.
And smeared it on the wall.
Oh, Johnny, what did you do?
Doo-doo.
Johnny, that is... Oh, honey.
How dare you interfere with our son's creative abilities, you chauvinist pig.
Oh, God.
Don't you realize that's as good as any Renoir? Our son is destined to be a great artist. But if you don't stop interfering, he'll end up in the gutter. Besides, it's a rental. Let those bourgeois pigs take care of the mess.
Next scene I would imagine would be Johnny Boy in school being asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Although in Fairfax, California, the pledge has been banned since the Civil War, we would imagine at some point in his early days of schooling, he might have been asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I refuse to do the Pledge of Allegiance. My mother says I don't have to. You know, I'm not going to waste my time pledging my allegiance to a bunch of dead old white men. Besides, this is a pig nation. Who wants to be a part of it anyway?
Oh, in the next scene, the teacher turns him on to smoking pot.
Johnny.
Oh, teach, what's happening, dude?
Are you still smoking those Lucky Strikes?
Yeah, it's all I can afford, man.
Come on over here. Let me expand your horizons.
Whoa.
little Kona Gold for you.
Kona Gold, huh? I'll take some of that.
The next scene is, of course, a hardened convict from San Quentin who's out on work release, and his work is teaching children multiculturalism.
All right, we're going to take a pause right here and come back to a day in the life of Johnny Jihad right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We are not talking about Tim Poor from Wisconsin. I refuse to talk about any of the Republican hacks, the fall guys for the machine. I'm not going to talk about any of the fakers who Rush Limbaugh gets so excited about. I refuse. I just refuse. I'm not buying into that rat game. I'm talking about something far more serious than which shill the Republicans are going to put up against the Irish president. I am talking about Rat Boy, American Taliban John Walker Lind, whose parents, especially his dad, is arguing that now that Bin Laden's gone, his son should come home. We now go back to a parody of a day in the life of Johnny Jihad right here on the Savage Nation.
Next scene is he's in Tamiskil High School, the school for special troublemakers. He's trying to grow corn. He puts the corn in the ground and steps on it with his foot.
Dude, I don't know why I should have to water this corn. Huh. I mean, it's natural, you know? Huh. I put it in the ground, I cover it with the soil, let nature do the rest. It's really taking me down that I have to do so much work in order to create my food, man. I don't know. My mom never raised me to do this kind of thing. Help me. I'm completely lost.
How about Johnny's first date?
Johnny, what's the matter with you? Why won't you kiss me? Don't you like me?
Oh, you have germs. You're a girl, and...
What, you don't like girls? What's your problem?
I hate my mother. So, can't you have more sensitivity for me? I'm going through something really difficult.
How about we take you to Johnny Jihad's cousin in Berkeley, California?
There's no actual released evidence that links Osama bin Laden to this.
Seems to be genetic.
Our parents taught us not to hit when we were young, not to hit back, and that's exactly what we're doing.
After being indoctrinated by the liberal left, Johnny had one final discussion with his father that sent him running off to the side of the Taliban.
Regarding the USS Cole, Johnny, I just think it was downright wrong.
Oh, you've got to be kidding, Dodd. That was a completely justifiable act of self-defense on behalf of the Yemen people. Oh, I can't take this anymore, dudes. I'm going off to war. I'm going to fight imperialism and greed and corporate control. I can't take it anymore.
It is uncertain what motivated Johnny Jihad to go off to war to take the side of the enemy. But here, Michael, is a final addendum to this story. Last week, just hours before Taliban and Al-Qaeda prisoners began their uprising in the northern Afghan fortress of Kala Jangi, CIA agents interviewed Johnny Jihad. The interrogation, which took place shortly before one of the agents, Michael Spann, was killed, was videotaped by an Afghan cameraman. There you have it, up to this point. Back to you, Michael Savage.
Savage.
Yep, my friend Jack says this should be animated. It's perfectly fun. You can't animate it, it's copyrighted. But, or would you rather talk about Aaron Gobarak or Darby Obama and the little people? Or would you like to hear more Blarney from Jay Carney? Or would you like to talk about more sham to shamrock in one generation? I have no idea what Obama's doing in Ireland. If he really thinks he's going to convince the white working class male that he isn't so bad, I believe that they're more out of touch with reality than even I suspect. I have no idea what in the world he's doing in Ireland. I haven't any idea. It's an embarrassment to us in America for him to try to pull off this scam. But then again, you know my feeling about the average person. Sometimes I have to shake my head when I look on the highways and I see people and I say, remember, they vote. Remember, Michael, they vote. They vote. Take a look how they eat. Take a look how they raise their children. Take a look at the popularity of certain television shows like Oprah Winfrey or whatever. Now you understand that you can never, ever go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. See, my problem in the 16 years I've been on radio, or however many years it's been, is I've actually overestimated the intelligence of the American people. I'll be frank with you. If I were to look back on my career, it would be as... See, I'm a former teacher, so I actually believe that people are more intelligent than you might believe. And that given an opportunity, they will come up to a higher standard than you expect from them. I'm sad to tell you it's not true. I'm sad to tell you the average person is actually quite dumb, easily cowed, easily bamboozled, easily just basically cannon fodder. And that's why the system treats you like the idiot you are, because you're cannon fodder to them. Okay? I mean, it's awful. It's just awful the way they see you. You're a peasant. You're a peon. Why is he in Ireland? Michael in New York, go ahead. You're calling. I'm from WOR. What in the world is Obama really doing in Ireland?
Michael, I think that it's very strategic that he went to Ireland because he loves to mock. So he's so spiteful. He has a real chip on his shoulder, and he likes to. He knows that Ireland is anti-British, pro-German, anti-Semitic, and he loves to go there and put that big Cheshire smile on and mock everybody. It's like when he goes to Notre Dame or when he goes to the military institutions or when he went to the FBI. You just look at him and you say, what is he doing there? But he really enjoys himself because, as I said, he's got a real chip on his shoulder, and he really likes to spite people.
I don't think so. I think I think his handlers are so stupid, and they know that the game is already over, that the Republicans are just on the mat for him, that they actually believe that they can get some stupid white male working-class men to think that he's, really like them. I really do believe that, and they're just liable to be right. Remember, the unions are behind them. The unions are behind them.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Live. All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're talking about Obama going to Ireland to discover his Irish roots. Unbelievable to me, incomprehensible how stupid they think you are. James Dellingpole said it best when he said Obama is a snake oil salesman like Blair. Both play the acceptable, moderate-seeming public face of a regime chock full of communist class warriors, single-issue rabble-rousers, malcontents, and eco-loons. And then, of course, there's the sad story of the American Taliban, Johnny Walker Lind, who I call Rat Boy affectionately. His father was invited to publish a full-page editorial or a large editorial in the Stalinist New York Times saying that now that Osama bin Laden is dead, it's time to release his son. And my answer to that is, Mr. Lind, yes, I agree your son should be released. You know when? When Michael Spann is released. When Johnny Michael Spann comes home, that's when your son should come home. And I'm going to take your calls on these topics, 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin in the heartland of America, which is facing a disaster of biblical proportions. In Kansas City, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Yes, I just wanted to say Barack Obama's over there drinking Irish ale while the people in Joplin, Missouri are cleaning up after one of the...
Yep, one of the worst disasters to befall the Midwest, and our shyster president is in Ireland.
Yes, sir. It's not right.
It's sickening. Well, he's not an American president. You know that he doesn't speak for the American people. He speaks for a small band of elitists somewhere in Zurich, Switzerland, where they hide their gold. North Carolina, Kyle, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, sir. Listen, what that last caller just said, it's disgusting. But my point is I think it's basic psychology. I think Mr. Obama is experiencing a severe identity crisis. He's pandering to any and all segments of the populace. I mean, he pulled this garbage with the native Africans, and he's pulled it with the Arabs. And I think, you know, if there was any doubt that he was a fraud, there is none now. And I will say this, I think before long, his search for an audience will fail. And when that last straw is pulled, the antidepressants get prescribed. So there you go.
The problem is the Republicans are on the mat for him. You actually believe there's a Republican out there who can run and win?
I like Herman Cain.
Who?
Herman Cain.
Oh, the pizza man. Okay, good luck. He's a nice man, but he can't win. He's unelectable. Impossible. Impossible. Absolutely impossible. New York City, WOR, Nick, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage.
Hello.
This is Nick. I'm originally from Eastern Europe. I used to work in the medical field as a physician. Here I'm in the medical field, too, as a physician assistant.
Yes.
I would like to give an analogy between Gorbachev in Soviet Union and Barack Obama in American Union.
Please do.
Perestroika in Russian means change in English. I would like to advise American people because of 20 years ago, I witnessed the destruction of a Soviet empire. And I'm witnessing the same process right here in America, the country which is the land of dreams, hopes, brave and smart and intelligent people is going down the drain. And my heart and my soul is breaking apart. And I'm
I hear this all the time from people who fled communism, whether it be in Russia. I hear it from people from China, Vietnam. I've heard it from people from other states in Asia. They cannot believe it. The American people are so gullible. They don't even know what's going on in front of their eyes. Those who have fled communism see that Obama is a naked communist. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I wrote a whole chapter entitled Obama the Destroyer. I see it. I see it. I have clarity on who the man is. Wisconsin, Carl, go ahead, please.
I believe Barack Obama is a megalomaniac. He gets his high when people cheer him. Watch the next time when they have him on the news and everybody's going crazy and they're clapping and waving and cheering. He's like a junkie that has that first rush of drugs that pulse through his system.
Well, have you noticed his arrogant face, how he rears it back and looks down on people? Have you noticed that one?
He certainly does.
You got to understand something. Obama's probably had an identity crisis most of his life for obvious reasons, which we don't have to dwell on right now. And he's a man who's also had the skids greased for him from early on. They greased the skids for this young man way, 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 way back, which is why he won't release his school records, because there's no question he got into school with very poor grades and was given everything on a silver platter. People kissed his behind, in other words, from day one. I know how liberals behave towards this type of individual. And the fact of the matter is, he now continues to want the world to adore him. Why he would expect Ireland to have any effect on the American public, I don't understand it. I know that 35 to 40 million Americans identify as having come from Irish blood. But how in the world does he think that by saying his great, 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 great something or other comes from Ireland going to make them think he's not what he is? That's all. Next case. Let's move on. Sacramento, Kenny, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
San Francisco, thanks. Hey, sorry. Hey, listen, I'll tell you what that pathetic guy is doing over there in Ireland. And he missed it on his apology tour, you see. He's over there apologizing for the potato famine. That's what he's doing.
I think you're trying to give me some Irish humor right now. Is he arguing that the American people caused the potato famine in 1851?
He probably is. But, Michael, let me just say one thing. My dad's a World War II vet and a Korean War vet. He's not going on 92. He's going to be 92 June 4th. We're going to have another party for him. He doesn't wear glasses. He doesn't use a cane. He drives a Jag to church every day. This is the worst he's ever seen it. But let me tell you, you tell that by that other gentleman. I think he was Russian that was speaking. There's still me left, okay? And I'm not gonna go down without a fight. I love this country.
Kenny, let me ask you something. You got my curiosity. Your father doesn't wear glasses at 90 what?
He's 92. He's never smoked and he's never drank. And he says the rosary every day. He's a very holy man.
So he has strong faith. He has strong faith.
He has very strong faith, yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't wear glasses. He doesn't use a cane. That's amazing.
Yeah,
now break my heart and tell me he eats meat and potatoes every night.
No, he eats very little. Matter of fact, he did a little talk up at the Chico University for my nephew about the longevity. He did a two-hour speech, and they wondered how he did it and everything. He said he hasn't really drank much water in 40, 50 years, and this group, the thing he thought it was overrated. And they call up trying to sell him insurance. He says, well, I'm 92, and I think I can make it 200. And, you know, I don't have a doctor now, and I don't have insurance, and I think I'm going to make it 200. What do you think about that?
He has no doctor. Isn't that something? Maybe Obama will force him to go to a state doctor who will declare him sick and put him on 8 medications and give him a cane and eyeglasses. Thanks for the call, Kenny. Yeah. Well, there are people out there who are made of great DNA. He must be one of them. No question about it. So anyway, before we go on with the show, the phone number here again, 1-800-449-8255, and the website, as you know, is michaelsavage.com. You know the topics of the day, and you know where I'm coming from. You know my politics. There are other things going on in the world. I want to give you a snapshot of my life, how boring it really is. On Saturday, I try to get an outboard motor that I have on the back of a runabout running. And an old friend of mine, a Jaguar mechanic I know for, 30 years. We ran into each other again in an auto show a year ago. So he came over. Now, this is a two-year-old Yamaha 20 horsepower, but because the gas got old, it didn't start a year ago. Then we restarted it. It wouldn't start again, so I bought a new battery. We put that in. That took us an hour to get the thing running, but she keeps conking out when we reduce it to idle if we don't put it on a fast idle. So I just shut the thing down after letting it run for an hour and put it back up on the ramp because it's not nice enough weather to run it anyway. That was Saturday. Now, Sunday, yesterday, there were small craft advisories on San Francisco Bay, and I know better than to go out in a big powerboat in small craft advisory, but I wanted to get my merit badge in foul weather because, you know, no matter how, let's say, windy it is on a bay, it's still not the open ocean. It's nothing. So I arranged to go out with a guy who bamboozled me into telling me he was once, many years ago, in the Dutch Navy. Could you believe this? Nice enough guy. I knew him through some people. He had gone out with me one time before. He was a bit of a nervous Nelly. So I figured let him crew on the boat. Normally, I only go out with the dog because I don't like to talk with anyone on a boat. Now, I keep my boat like a model ship. The rails are varnished. The stainless steel is gleaming. Everything is perfect on my boats because I like a boat to be perfect. So I go out with this guy, and I give him a lecture on exactly how to what he's expected to do when I'm docking. Remember, I'm up on the flybridge, and I can't be on the deck at the same time. So I say to him, I'm going to call him John. I say, John, here's what you do. When I back her into the dock, you step off and you tie the stern line on first. I will then use the bow thruster and bring the bow around. And then I'll, you know, throw you a bow line. You'll bring a bow line down from the center, which you've tied. Yes, yes, I understand. I pull up to the dock in a fairly choppy wind, and I see something's going wrong. Nothing is right. I'm yelling, I'm screaming, the guy's not using the two-way radio, I can't get in touch with him. I look down, all of the lines that he tried to attach are in the water, that's number one. Number two, he tied a center line on, that's all we had. So blah, 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 after screaming and yelling, I see we're tied up a little. I finally come off the flybridge to help correct it. And you know what he says to me? I think that I may have caused you some damage. I said, what? What happened? I figured maybe I scuffed the dock or something. You know what this idiot did? He took the line. These are big, thick, heavy lines that you tie. This is a 40-ton boat that you tie up against the dock. Instead of running a line through a cleat out onto the dock, he wrapped it around a stainless steel rail, which I didn't know, and it broke the stainless steel rail off of my boat. Can you believe this? And then the guy has the nerve to say to me, I'm not sure I actually did it. I went ballistic, screaming. Are you at blah, blah, blah? So then I calmed down. We removed the rail. It took a good hour to get the rail off. I had broke off half the screws, unscrewing them. I got a 10-foot section, and I'm going to show you how beautiful this country really is when you get down to the working class man. I want to show you what goes on with boatsmanship. I mean, most guys have captains who do all of this. I like to have my hands into all of it. It gives me a sense of reality. I just happened 2 weeks ago to have bought a new cordless DeWalt screwdriver because there's a bit of an eddy in me. I grew up fixing things in my dad's shop, and I like to use tools on a mild basis. I bought the sweetest tool set I've ever seen with new bits. I had no idea why I was buying it. Well, it was for yesterday. So now there's about 12, 14 screws that have to come out, right? In addition to the stanchion that broke, there were four others that were screwed in. So in unscrewing the stainless steel screws, about 6, 7 of them, the heads broke off and the screws got stuck in the wood, if you know what I'm talking about. Then the last two screws, I couldn't get the screwdriver into it. I had to pull them out by wrench. I had to yank them out by wrench. Luckily, I'm a little handy. So I got the rail off. Now, that's step one. Now I call 5 different people. Do you know anyone who can fix stainless steel without ruining it? Because it's only a 15-degree bend. Everyone says, yeah, you got to go to Werner's Welding in Sausalito, one of the old-timers on the dock. His dad was a welder. Well, guess what? I brought the iron down in my car to my good friends at List Marine. They're the greatest mechanics around. And they held the rail for me because Werner wasn't in. And then he called me later. He says, is this the Michael Savage? I said, yes. I never met him. He says, I've loved your show from the beginning. I've listened to you back since the early days. He said, you know what? I'm leaving on vacation tomorrow. I go away every year this time. He said, but I'll fix your stainless steel the best I can today. I'll get it done today. I just want to show you what good people there are out there. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, we're asking what the heck is Obama doing in Ireland? And he's pulling this malarkey on us, this blarney about his roots and this and that. Let's face it. Ireland is a basket case. Today, U.S. stocks plunged on European debt worries. I don't know if you know about that. Dow Jones fell about 180 points before paring back some of its losses because of Greece, because of Portugal, and because of Ireland. I wouldn't be surprised if Obama doesn't grant Ireland some forgiveness of debt or give them $1 billion like he did the other day to Egypt. Money we don't know where it comes from. Where's he going to get the money from? You've got to understand also that Ireland is a socialist state, a basket case, and perhaps for that reason Obama's visiting, in order to see if he can model more of the American economy on the Irish model. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he wants to see how to further socialize America and further destroy the country. Kevin in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I was calling. I was listening to some of your callers and yourself saying that Obama has no right to be in Ireland when he has actually more right than myself or even yourself to be in Ireland. His mother, Anne Dunham.
Kevin, I understand his mother was of Irish ancestry, but why is he there is the question.
Well, you just stated that Ireland has debt problems. He's probably there trying to resolve some of their issues. He is the president of the United States.
Wait a minute. How can he resolve their debt problems when we're broke here? Where's the money going to come from?
The question that I'm talking about.
No, that is the question. What is he doing in Ireland when we have a flood of epic proportions in the Midwest? Does he not understand he's the president of the U.S., not president of the world? The man should be in Joplin, Missouri, not in Dublin, Ireland, slugging down a beer.
Well, the man has...
Moreover, and I'll tell you something else. You're saying he's going there because his mother was Irish. Why was he then our first black president until today? When did he suddenly discover he was partly Irish? He is playing the race card, number one. Number two, he has a business to be in Joplin, Missouri, not in Dublin, Ireland, drinking beer. It's a disgrace, in my opinion. I don't care if he planned the trip. He has no business being abroad right now. We were hit with a natural disaster of biblical proportions, never mind epic proportions. Why don't you ask the people in the Midwest how they feel about the gallivanting president, the peripatetic Obama, the traveling salesman?
Savage.
+1 800 449 8255. I think you got to understand, look, politics are what they are. All politicians are actors, and all actors wish to be politicians. And in this sense, I think Obama is showing he's a very poor actor. He certainly has very poor writing and very poor directing, if you want to put it in the entertainment modality. What in the world is he doing in Ireland? We have a series of tornadoes and floods in the Midwest. You've got people homeless in the Middle West, and he's out there drinking beer in Ireland, talking about his roots in Ireland. This is after years of beating us up with black liberation theology right out of Reverend Wright's church. It's incomprehensible, the writing and the directing that this administration is from. The fact of the matter is, I don't think I'm the only one who sees him for what he is. I began the show by reading from James Dellingpole of the UK Telegraph, who said that Obama and, of course, his ex-guy over there, Blair, were much of the same. And he said that Tony Blair and Barack Obama have an awful lot in common. Both are lawyers, both are snake oil salesmen, both claim to be post-partisan and third way and consensual. Both play the acceptable, moderate-seeming public face of a regime chock full of communists, class warriors, single-issue rabble-rousers, malcontents, communitarians, and eco-loons hell-bent on destroying every last vestige of what once made their country great. I couldn't have written it better myself. I wish I could. But when I find a writer who writes so well, I have to quote him. It's up on michaelsavage.com. And he says, Barack Obama plants a tree at the presidential residence in Dublin. Ah, be Jesus and Begara. I'll be swearing, boy, the old shrine to the Virgin, with the shamrocks growing round it next to the hill where Cuchulainn slew the great leprechaun of Kildare on St. Patrick's Day, that Barack Seamus O'Toole Flaherty Joyce Obama is the most Irish U.S. president that ever set foot on the Emerald Isle. So he is. So he is. Except when he's in Africa, of course, when he disappears into the dry ice and reemerges with a grass skirt. Oh, prince of the father of a thousand warrior sons, keeper of King Solomon's mines, bare-handed slayer of lions, undaunted victim of the evil colonial British Empire. And when he's in the Middle East, he is al-Barack Hussein Obama, protector of the holy shrine, smiter of the kuffar, of the caliphate. Oh, yeah. It sure is interesting to be living in interesting times. And we're going back, of course, to the American Taliban, John Walker Lind, or Rat Boy. We play another special treat for you, which is from Rat Boy's days in Temescal High School, his imaginary curriculum right here on the Savage Nation.
This is Graham Hancock with a special report by Michael Savage, who is in the field. Michael has ventured into the hinterlands of Marin County to examine the cultural abyss experienced by Rat Boy. Here is his report.
We have an update for you on Rat Boy's High School in Marin County, California. A curriculum was anonymously sent to us by a former student of Temescal High School, the home of Rat Boy. We were astonished to discover that the following courses were accepted as academic equivalents. In Rat Boy's High School, for example, we learned that if a student wakes up stoned out of his gourd from the night before, from partying or too much guitar playing, too much cheap red wine and bongoing, he can call in sick.
Oh, teach, it's me, dude. I'm not coming in today. I'm going to lay on the floor while I recover from last night and stare at my kitty all day. Kitty.
We were shocked to find out this qualified for Ecology 100, the animal-human bond. Astonishingly, if a student in a warm month decided to go to the beach all day, hang out, smoke dope, and not report to school, all he had to do was call his teacher at Rat Boy High School and tell him he was whale-watching or seal-searching or gull gazing.
Oh, teach, I went to the beach, and we're here watching the whales, man. It's blowing my mind. The seagulls are flying over. Ah, I don't know if I can handle much more of this reality.
If a student went to a ghetto to purchase drugs, he could call in and say that he was doing anthropology, and that satisfied the Anthro 100 requirement, buying drugs in a ghetto.
Teach, I met my pushers. We're doing a social experiment. Oh, that's it. Yeah, I won't be back for a while. I'll be too stoned.
We were shocked to find that if a girl wanted to hang out at a mall all day, that would satisfy the requirements for American Studies 100.
Hey, Teach, I have to go to the mall today to get myself a pair of Doc Martens and some black lipstick and the new Marilyn Manson album.
Astonishingly, we discovered that if a student smoked upwards of 10 cigarettes in an 8-hour period, that qualified for investigating corporate ripoffs, i.e., the tobacco industry and how it seduces children into smoking.
Those evil corporate giants forcing me to accept this tobacco addiction. Oh, I'm gonna riot or sue or something when I'm finished with the smoke.
And what about lunch? If they go to the neighboring Japanese restaurant and they clasp their hands together and bow, that qualifies for Multicultural Studies 200, Advanced Interaction with an Ethnic.
Oh, konnichiwa. I'll have some sushi and some sake.
And shockingly, we discovered that one radical teacher, now this was not accepted at the school, recommended that if a young lady who terminated her pregnancy by throwing the aborted fetus in a dumpster would get course credit for political activism, even that was too much for the elders of the school.
Haven't you yet understood that a boy is a dog, is a pig, is a rat? Well, you just need to understand this. If it gets in your way, get rid of it.
Vandalism of a Republican's property was considered Ecology 101, gearing up for future work in Seattle and Genoa. Ruckus camp in the summer, when they went to the Big Daddy Ruckus camp in Berkeley and learned how to riot, how to hurt police without getting hurt back, how to wrap their arms in metal tubes, how to go limp when being thrown into a police van. This was considered the sine qua non of poli-sci, advanced political science.
There's no actual released evidence that links Osama bin Laden to this.
Religion 100 at Rat Boy High, I was astonished to learn, consisted of studying witchcraft and or paganism. The five major religions of the world were not permitted to be discussed at the high school. Crafts involved included mixing the blood of a dead squirrel with the feather of a turkey vulture and chanting in some intelligible lingo in the backyard of Rat Boy High. And this qualified for Religion 100. And so, as I say, Graham, this is a full curriculum. A full curriculum, mind you, at Rat Boy High School, according to a former student, that is, who wants to remain anonymous.
Well, there you have it, a special report from Michael Savage in the field. Now we're throwing it back to you, the Savage audience. What do you think would be course curriculum for Rat Boy High School? Give us a call at 1-800-449-8255. Now it's your turn to add to the curriculum course right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, I think that's about 8 or 9 years old. I got to tell you, it's really funny because I was laughing at it. Of course, we would change Doc Martens and Marilyn Manson to, I guess, to Lady Gaga and whatever, flip-flops, whatever the junkies are wearing today. I happen to be a Lady Gaga fan. I think she's one of the most talented entertainers I've ever seen in my life, incidentally. I've never seen anybody as electric as her. I saw her Madison Square Garden show on TV. I was amazed, by the way. I wasn't amazed at the idiots in the audience chanting and jumping up and down. I don't understand that part of it. But in terms of energy, as a performer myself, you got to understand it's very difficult to do what a person like her does. It's not easy. Anyway, we're talking about Rat Boy. We're talking about outboard motors. We're talking about the out-of-control president. We're talking about how he's a ditched America in a time of need again. All this right here on the Savage Nation, the phone number being 1-800-449-8255. What in the world is he doing in Ireland? Forget about the roots garbage. That's nonsense. We know that 35 to 40 million Americans have some Irish ancestry. But do you really believe that the white working class male in particular is going to suddenly be bamboozled by this communist into thinking he's one of them because he suddenly declares that, you know, his mother's great, 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 whatever comes from Ireland. I don't really believe that that's the reason he's there. It has to do with debt, Irish debt and debt forgiveness. And God only knows where he's going to forgive, what he's going to forgive the debt with. You know what I'm saying? 1-800-449, I said that already. Boston, WRKO, haven't heard from you in a while. Boston Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Savage, nice to talk to you. My comment is on Barack's visit to Ireland. I think that it shows that he's on the ropes. He wants, he's desperate for votes. New England area, Boston especially, a lot of Irish heritage, Irish Americans, you know, he's trying to bamboozle everybody. Anyone who would buy that
Yeah, but how could the white working class family, who's been hit so hard by Obama's communism in the form of high gas prices, Obamacare, you name it, waivers for rich people in San Francisco, how could they suddenly think that he's one of them?
Well, in this area of the country, especially around here, this not this generation, but the generation before, everyone had a picture of JFK in the house and Congress.
I know that. I come from a family that's immigrant-based, and they also were all Democrats their whole life because they, at that time, they said that the Democrat was for the working man and the Republicans were for the rich. That's what I was raised on.
That's holding over, and he's trying to play to that. He's trying to hold on to the last vestiges. It's votes. It's a lot of votes. That's all it's about.
Hold on. JFK, he is not. And Michelle is not Jackie Onassis Kennedy, I'm sorry to tell you.
But, it's all about the votes. If he can sway, we have a lot of, Irish immigrants, new people, new voters, young voters. He's playing to this whole Irish thing. It's a slim plan.
I don't know. Maybe people are stupider than some of us think. I really appreciate your listening and calling from WRKO land that in Boston. Let's go to the next quick caller here. Louise in Utah, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I just wanted to know why you like Lady Gaga.
Because she's a fabulous because she's a superb entertainer.
Oh, I really thought you were joking.
No, I'm not joking. Oh. I appreciate skill in any sphere. I think she's extremely skilled. Have you ever watched her?
Oh, yeah, but I have. She makes me sick.
Why? What does she do that makes you sick?
She just seems evil. She seems like she's possessed.
Well, any entertainer, because they shake their hips and they have black nails, you think that they're really evil?
No, not the shaking of the hips.
Louise, look, I pay no attention to their politics. All entertainers to the 99th percentile are radical leftists because they don't know any better. Most of them are high school dropouts. They're drug addicts, and they're just road animals. They repeat what they hear. They really don't think, okay? I understand that. I don't watch her because I think she's brilliant. I watch her because she's a fine entertainer.
Oh.
Well, you know what I'm saying? It's the same with Robert De Niro. I think he's a great actor. His politics are asinine, juvenile, adolescent, sophomoric, first grade. I don't listen to Robert. I don't watch Robert De Niro because I think he's a philosopher. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My call is directly to those 40 million Irish Americans. And whether you're listening and watching in New York, or New Haven, or in San Diego, or St. Louis, whether you're Irish by blood, or by marriage, or by desire, we, your Irish family, are right here!
Okay, I see what's coming. Ireland's a basket case right now, and Obama's going to give them a fortune in some kind of debt forgiveness or money, which he doesn't have, of course, in order to buy the Irish-American vote. I can guarantee you that's coming in the next day or two. Suddenly the great Obama and his wife are going to give away billions of dollars or whatever that they don't have and move on. He did it last week with Egypt. He forgave $1 billion in debt. Now, here's another story that I didn't get to yet that I've had that I think I'm going to save because it's too heartbreaking to believe. I knew about this story, but I was afraid to bring it up. The Supreme Court of California yesterday ordered California to release tens of thousands of prison inmates. 38,000 to 46,000 prisoners have to be released because the scum vermin in the ACLU sued the state of California, saying that the prison conditions were not up to par. The ACLU said the court had done the right thing by addressing the egregious, quote, and extreme overcrowding in California prisons. David Fathi, director of the ACLU National Prison Project, was gloating when he said, reducing the number of people in prison not only would save the state taxpayers half a billion annually, it would lead to the implementation of truly rehabilitative programs that lower recidivism rates and create safer communities. Your Supreme Court today ordered California to release up to 46,000 prisoners to relieve overcrowding and putting them on the streets. There's your conservative Supreme Court. In dissent, Justice Antonin Scalia, a genius, called the ruling staggering and absurd. He said the High Court had repeatedly overruled the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for ordering the release of individual prisoners. Now he said the majority were ordering the release of 46,000 felons. He said, quote, terrible things are sure to happen as a consequence of this outrageous order. Agreeing with him were Clarence Thomas. Agreeing with them were Alito and Roberts. But the radical communist vermin on the Supreme Court said, hey, let him out of jail. We don't care. My only hope is that the ACLU's wives, if they have any, and children, if they have any, are not mugged, raped, or shot by some of the felons that are released onto the streets. That is my only hope, that this does not happen. The 5-4 decision represents one of the largest prison release orders in U.S. history. The court majority said overcrowding has caused suffering and death. In a sharp dissent, Justice Scalia said, terrible things are sure to happen. Do I have to ask you what you think is going to happen when 38,000 to 46,000 prisoners are released in the state of California? Tell me what you think is going to happen. They're released just in time to vote for Obama, that we know. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to another city, somewhere other than New York and Sacramento, where my audience seems to predominate. Gary, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR.
Yeah, I think the answer is very clear as to why he's over in Ireland. He's going to redistribute the wealth of the United States, not only here, but also around the world. And then after we're financially decimated.
Right, I am sure he's going there to so-called forgive the Irish debt. But on what basis can he do it without Congress approving it? Where is the money coming from?
It's from our future.
Well, he's going to borrow it from China, and who's going to pay that off? Look, we have terrible, 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 terrible situation here in the United States of America. We have an out-of-control communist president who's a narcissist and an egomaniac, all rolled into one. And then we have a moribund Republican Party that's committed Harry Caray. They're already on the match for Obama. Baltimore, Anthony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm calling about a draft boy and that California story leads right up to it. I'm afraid under Obama he may be out one day. And after reading The Enemy Within, of course, by Michael Savage, I refer to you have the left who is Muslim appeasers. You have CARE and groups like that who are co-conspirators to Hamas and the Taliban. And then you have a guy like some brat boy who takes it over the limit and actually takes to the battlefield for the enemy. And
And the New York Times wants us to let him come out of jail now. I say in final note, yes, rat boy can come out of jail. He can be released when Johnny Spann comes back from the dead.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
the big news today is Obama's visit to his homeland of Ireland. You see, although he was the first black president for the first couple of years of his administration, he now wants to show us that he has European roots as well. So he's gone back home to Erin Go Barak. It's unbelievable to me. More Blarney from Jay Carney. Seems to me the Irish are more excited about Obama than we are. I guess that's what they mean by green energy. Yeah, well, anyway, who cares? It's all politics on your expense, Mr. Green. What else is in the news? Well, how about the devastation in Missouri? You hear about that one? 116 dead, nearly 500 Twister deaths this year. Well, it's awful out there in the heartland. Looting in Minneapolis after a tornado. Threat of more tornadoes bearing down. What else is in the news? Oh, did you hear this one? The U.S. Supreme Court ordered California to release up to 46,000 prisoners into the street. Justice Scalia said terrible things are sure to happen. This is all because the ACLU said that they weren't being treated properly. Their medical care was inadequate. You hear this? Let's just pray that some of those murderers and rapists don't come to ACLU's home. Maybe they could put a special mark on their door to say we're liberals. How about gas prices coming up on this Memorial Day weekend? Gas prices are forcing Americans to cut back on Memorial Day weekend plans. Oh, boo-hoo. Boo-hoo. They can't go on a long ride. America, the no-vacation nation, they're calling it. So people stay home and cook their hot dog, clog their arteries, whatever. Well, that's what happens when you have a green president. He takes a vacation, but you don't. And that's the story, so what are you going to do about it? I got to fuel up my boat. I need 1,000 gallons of gas. What should I do about it? I could sell my boat. You know, if you don't want it, get rid of it. Get a bicycle. What else is going on out there? Well, everything and kind of nothing. Mom arrested after dropping newborn down trash chute. Baby okay. Sad, isn't it? Oh, well, GE to advise Obama as overseas holdings expand. Really? Now, what in the world does that mean? GE, the American company, is investing overseas? I didn't know that. You mean seven publicly traded U.S. corporations represented on Obama's Advisory Council for Jobs and Competitiveness have devoted a growing pool of their non-U.S. earnings to investments in other countries? Really? A group of multinational companies with current or former chief executive officers on Obama's Job Council have over the past 4 years almost doubled the cumulative amounts they've reinvested overseas, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Now, what are these wonderful patriotic American companies? Why, there's the peripatetic Jeffrey Immelt of GE. There's Paul Otellini, Citigroup, Inc. There's Richard Parsons, American Express. There's DuPont. There's Eastman Kodak. There's Procter & Gamble. All wonderful Americans. And they're not investing in America. They're investing overseas. Thank you, Obama, for lying to America. And thank you, corporate America, for stabbing us in the back. 1-800-449-8255. And there it is. That's the story. Now let's go to michaelsavage.com and see what's on the news. Okay, if you missed it last week, see what Savage says about the situation in the Middle East. I read from Ezekiel, and it says there will be a war. It's a soundbite. Obama, please, says James Dellingpole of the London Telegraph. He says Blair and Obama are snake oil salesmen. Both play the acceptable, moderate-seeming public face of a regime chock full of communists, class warriors, single-issue rabble-rousers, malcontents, and eco-loons. That about says it all, doesn't it? That's from James Dellingpole of the London Telegraph, one of my favorite columnists. He doesn't pull punches. He says it like it is. Shall I repeat it? Ah, yes. He says, ah, be Jesus and Begora. I'll be swearing by the old shrine to the Virgin with the shamrocks growing round it next to the hill where Tertullian slew the great leprechaun of Kildare on St. Patrick's Day that. But Ach Seamus O'Toole Flaherty Joyce Obama is the most Irish U.S. president that ever set foot on the Emerald Island. So he is, so he is. And in the Middle East, where he is, Al-Barak Hussein Obama protector of the holy shrine, smiter of the kuffar, lion of the desert, tent-loving aficionado of the oversweetened coffee, restorer of the caliphate. This is good stuff. This is good stuff. I've got to read this on the air. Obama and the shadow socialist group behind Egypt's fall. Don't miss the essay. Police have given Obama a special code name, Smart Aleck. You know I'm banned in Britain, and thanks to many of you, I'm still fighting it. But do you know that a convicted terrorist, a Muslim, by the way, has not been banned from Britain? He's the court stopped him from being deported. Feeling betrayed yet? Jewish supporters backing off Obama. Mm-hmm. Turkey pressed Hamas and Israel's right to exist, so they say. Taliban suicide bomber targets NATO kill six. Rich Mexicans trade investments for chance to move to America. Obama's $2 billion for Egypt leaves even Dems dumbfounded. Don't miss the story on a frog in heat. That's the socialist pig who, as you well know, the whole story about that, right? How about in-state tuition for illegal aliens? Well, California has a policy of granting in-state college tuition to illegal immigrants. And they've been challenged, and it's going to the U.S. Supreme Court. How about Hawaii and the homelessness? How about the bums and the drug addicts laying on the sands of Waikiki Beach? Well, they're cleaning it up, you see, because Obama's going to visit there soon. How about George W. Bush? Made $15 in speaking fees since leaving office. Good for him. Tour de France rider crushed to death in a bizarre accident. How about Arnold Schwarzenegger? They say he has a passion for unattractive women. He likes women to admire him. See his picture on michaelsavage.com. Finally, for those of you who think Obama is great, patients die after waiting in ambulance outside a full hospital. 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm a realist. It's an imperfect world. I understand that. It's a question of how much imperfection you can take in an administration. And we in the media have an obligation to be watchdogs for the people and spokesmen for the people, not lapdogs. We're not supposed to be lapdogs. We're supposed to be watchdogs. We're supposed to say foul ball. We call them like we see them. 1-800-449-8255. Can you explain why this is going on? Well, we know why. Why go on and on about it? Let's take some callers. New York, WOR, Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Dr. Savage, how are you tonight? The way he can solve this problem, I think he needs to have a beer with all the Arab nations, just like he did with that professor and that police officer. That can solve all the problems.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I mean, they can sing together. They can eat poi together. They can sing Don Ho songs together, and maybe they'll come out loving one another.
Never know. This war.
You never know. And, you know, give peace a chance, is what you're saying, Steve. It's worth sitting down with Islamo-fascists who've been out for the blood of Christianity for 1,300 years.
We can make deals with them. Where's an Al-Qaeda camp? Maybe I can make a deal with them. I might get something good out of it. I don't understand this country.
Well, the interesting thing is to understand how sensitive the Obama administration really is. Do you know that right now they're bringing in immigrants from Yemen? Did you know? I'm not making this up. Hillary Clinton's State Department is using diversity visas to encourage immigration to the United States from Yemen. As I speak to you, they did not close Yemen off. I don't think you know this. The State Department is actually issuing diversity visas to encourage immigration to the U.S. from terror-ridden Yemen. Are you aware of this? Did you hear this yet on the radio today?
I've heard it. How about Jerzy Corzine, the governor? He wants to give illegal aliens, undocumented workers, that's the new political way, he wants their children to get half education on college.
It doesn't end well. This goes bad. It gets much bigger. They're testing. The crotch bomber was a test. They got through to the CIA with a double agent. You know what's coming. Thank you for the call. You know what's coming. We all know it. We all sense it in our genetic code what's coming under this guy. Wait, you see. Now you say, well, maybe he wants it so that they can declare martial law. I don't know. Go down that road if you want. Many people believe the Mueller building was an inside job. Remember, that was during the Lewinsky scandal. Blah, blah. I heard it all. It was during the Lewinsky scandal, and Bill was on the ropes. The next thing you know, boom. And all of a sudden, the sympathy and, you know, the Reichstag fire kind of concept. But that's beyond the Archie Bunker. Archie doesn't get that far into it. You know, Archie's take me out to the ball game, the Republican good, Democrat bad. And here I am, sitting alone, a party of one. Cincinnati, Ohio. Cindy, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Uncle Michael, thank you. I'm just thinking about how...
What's the baby doll voice? Who are you?
I'm 33, actually.
And how come you have such a sweetheart little voice? Like, what is that? Is that like is that a special trained radio thing or?
No, I guess I've just been raised well. My dad was in Vietnam, and I read a lot. I've read all your books, and I love them. I love Psychological Nudity on your new book. It's really a great book. I mean, it's really a great.
That's nice. Hearing it coming from a person with a voice like yours, I'm titillated.
No, thank you. Well, I'm thinking that without you, we really won't know what's real. You're the only person that is...
Well, I'm a realist. There's no question about it. I give a realist view. I mean, I'm like a guy from the 1950s. I'm a throwback in that regard.
You are, but you're...
I haven't been brainwashed, and my brain is unwashed. In that sense, it's accurate.
It's very true.
It hasn't been washed of the gray matter. What, do you want a white brain that's washed of the gray matter? Cindy, how do you get through a day? Who do you talk to?
I talk to my books. I read the Bible. I read classics. I talk to my animals. I talk to babies. I talk to nature. You get through the day, no matter what. And you help us get through the day, because we can look forward to you and a person that is talking on our level and who understands.
Have you ever read Madame Bovary?
Yes.
See, I mean, you say you read the classics. I threw that out of nowhere. Do you relate to Madame Bovary in any way?
Well, somewhat. I really like Dickens, and I like, Homer, and I like history, so...
But there you are, stuck in Cincinnati, Ohio. You got no one to talk to, right, other than a parrot.
Yeah.
Oh, what a world it is, Cindy. A woman like you should be with an intelligent, conservative guy your age, right?
Well, I am. I'm with you, and I'm with...
No, come on. No radio relationships are allowed.
Silly now. No, I love Mrs.
I know. It's the beginning of the year. I don't want to get too heavily into this conspiracy stuff and attacks and... All right, whatever. Let's let that go. We'll just let that go. Come, I play The Sea of Love. I don't know why it's going through my head right now after that call. I feel like Sea of Love will play Misty for me. I'm verging on it. I feel like I'm on the verge of a bad migraine. I am seconds away from a clamp down.
The sea of love.
Some vacation I was on. I go to Florida and freeze. All right. No, it's a shocker. And there's still global warming. Where's Al Gore? Like a groundhog. Every time it snows, he goes underground. You can't find him. You can't debate him anywhere. But the guy he can't even be found. Aren't they understanding that the average person, even the average person, understands that it's a fraud and it's over? You know, ClimateGate exposed the fraud that it was, the rigged up trick data. That never was. And the schmucks are pushing global warming and cap and trade taxes. And none of the average person doesn't know. It's funny to show you how brainwashed people are. And you could see some of them are nice people. Most of the brainwashed libs are actually nice people. I told you that before. They're not actually evil, as you would think I would think. So there's a guy, a waiter, like in a restaurant, I think. I don't know. He must have been 30, 32. Nice looking guy. Yeah, a nice guy, like 32, a little beard on him. I went and asked for the owner on something I was going to ask him. I said, well, tell him I'll be back And I said, I'm leaving. It's too cold for me. And then I turned and I said, it just shows you how smart Al Gore is. And I saw that the kid actually didn't laugh. He was almost taken aback by the obvious intelligence of the remark, which is to me absurdly apparent. And he didn't actually put two and two together that the cold spells, the frigidity, the cold winter, the blizzards, prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the whole science behind global warming was never science to begin with. It was pure hysteria and a scam on top of it all. Because he's locked into the doxy. That's his religion. His religion is believing in Gaia. Gaia, global warming, Earth. Earth is an animal, a spirit. Get out the nose thing. You know that there was human sacrifice in the United States of America amongst the Pawnee Indians until the 1820s, until it was stopped by the U.S. cavalry and Christianity. I don't know if you know that. I mean, you know, look, the cavalry gets a lot of bad raps, and I know they did some terrible things, but you look back. So they did some terrible things, but they eliminated human sacrifice. So anyway, to go back to the overall schemata of what I was talking about, which I already forgot. Where was I? What was I talking about? Indians. How did I get to the Indians, guys? It wasn't a bad story, but I swear I lost the train of thought. Gene Healy is the vice president and contributor to the Heritage Foundation. He joins us now on the Savage Nation to tell us about his take on Obama's war on fun, whatever that means. Gene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be here.
What do you mean when you say Obama's waging a war on fun?
Well, if you look at what he's done over the last 2.5 years, there's a real pattern where maybe you've heard the phrase, is Cass Sunstein, appointees likes to use nudging Americans into healthier lifestyle choices. Well, what he's done is really more than nudge, and everything from smoking to alcohol consumption to even the amount of salt that you're allowed to have in your food. The administration has taken a very keen interest in all of this, and they're hard at work trying to improve your health through the power of the federal government. I think one of the most shocking examples of it was the FDA's announcement last year that it's embarked on a 10-year program to reduce the amount, slowly ratchet down the amount of salt that's allowed in processed foods. They actually said in the Washington Post that this was part of a plan to, quote, adjust the American palate to a less salty diet. I've got my own copy of the Constitution here, and I missed the part where the federal government has jurisdiction over how much salt Americans like to eat. Among other things they've been doing, graphic warning labels on cigarettes, including, they've proposed including one with a toe tag on a corpse and another with a mother blowing smoke on her baby. They banned clove cigarettes. They're likely to ban menthol cigarettes. It's good for the president that he managed to quit smoking, but, the rest of us out here are all grown-ups, and we ought to be able to enjoy a legal product if we so choose.
But what do you mean? Is this really about health care reform or what?
There is an element there. The more we're all on the hook for everybody else's health, the more we, the taxpayer, arguably get a say in how they in their lifestyles and how much they're expected to cost us. And in fact, in Obamacare, I think a lot of people don't know this, but there's a provision for menu labeling for large chain restaurants, telling you how much fat, how many calories, and so forth are in the portions you're ordering. All of which is all to the good if a restaurant wants to offer that sort of information and consumers demand it. But maybe it's the camel's nose under the tent toward a much broader regulation of Americans' consumption choices on the grounds that now we're all paying for each other's health care.
Shouldn't the free market be allowed to decide whether restaurants put calorie counts on menus, or do you think it should be mandatory?
Sure, yeah. You've Applebee's. There are a couple other chains that have done that in the past. And, you know, a lot of consumers do take a keen interest in what they're putting into their bodies, and we've seen them demand more and more information. I don't think the federal government has the constitutional power or authority to properly understood to mandate that sort of thing. But I think it's if consumers demand it, then by all means, it ought to be provided through the free market.
Does the FDA have any limits on what it can ban, or it can ban anything?
Yeah, in fact, one of the they got slapped back by speaking of smoking regulation, they got slapped back recently by a federal judge because they were this one's a tough one to figure out. Maybe you know about e-cigarettes, the little devices that give smokers who are trying to quit a little bit of nicotine, but they don't actually emit any smoke. There's no smoke inhaled. There's no secondhand smoke. And the FDA was on the verge of banning this, regulating it as an unauthorized medical device. And they actually got pushed back by a federal court. And so e-cigarettes are now legal. But you have to wonder what's wrong with this product. I mean, this is something that doesn't do any of the bad things that cigarettes do and might actually help people quit. I mean, is the problem that somebody might enjoy it, or that it looks like a cigarette? And there really seems to be a moralistic puritanism going on there.
Do you think the government will find more and more things to make illegal and to ban as the health care law phases in under Obama's fascist care?
I think that's quite likely. In fact, there was a story the other day about Arizona is considering fining obese people $50 a year who if they don't follow the recommendations of their doctor. This is $50 a year I don't think is really going to make a huge impact on anybody's bottom line or on their consumption choices, but it's a principle that the weight you maintain, the food you choose to put in your body is no longer your choice alone, because it affects others who pay for health care. And I think that's a really dangerous principle because, who knows where that leads. If we're already issuing orders about how much salt can be allowed in food, now we've begun under health care regulation to fine people for being fat. I think you add a few decades to this process and you're quite far down the slippery slope.
So you believe Obama's war on fun is a temperance movement that's kind of similar to the one that led to the 18th Amendment prohibiting alcohol? You mean they're going to prohibit food?
I don't know if we're that far yet, but there's definitely, H.L. Mencken said once that the Puritan is a person who's desperately haunted by the fear that somewhere, somehow, someone out there is having fun. There's definitely an element of that here. You're seeing the people that Obama has put into some of the regulatory agencies certainly have that mentality. The man who is the head of the Centers for Disease Control now, a guy named Thomas Frieden. He used to be the health commissioner of New York City under Bloomberg, and he brought in the trans fat ban, mandatory menu labeling in New York. He helped prosecute the smoking ban, in which the Bloomberg's administration has gone so far as to fine and cite bars and bartenders for the crime of having ashtrays out on the table. This guy Frieden, now head of Obama's CDC, has said that he said as New York health commissioner, when anyone dies of a preventable disease in New York City, it's my fault. Well, it's like, thanks for caring, but that is a pretty broad view of regulatory responsibility by someone who considers himself in charge of the general populace's health. And if that's their responsibility, if that's how they conceive of their responsibility, we shouldn't be surprised that they also seek power to meet those responsibilities.
Why did the government shut down the online poker sites?
Well, that Obama hasn't said anything about that publicly. So you have it's hard to unearth what the real rationale is there. What we do know is, the Department of Justice last month shut down five major online poker sites. If you went on some of these sites, the day that they did this, you'd see a message saying that the FBI has seized the domain name. And they're also seeking like $3 billion in forfeited assets from these folks. And this is amazing. Poker is generally legal in the United States. Playing cards over the internet, it's not clear that this is a real public scourge. And it certainly seems to a lot of people that the Department of Justice should have better things to do than go after online poker sites that are enjoyed by hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Well, don't you think we're heading for a nanny state society similar to what we see in the once free United Kingdom?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, that is definitely a mentality that you see in many of the people that Barack Obama has appointed, from Thomas Friedman, who thinks it's his CDC commissioner, who thinks it's his job to protect everybody in the world from a preventable disease, to Cass Sunstein, who thinks the government can use behavioral science to nudge Americans towards healthier lifestyles. I think there is a broad movement within the administration toward the notion that as they like to say, we're all in this together. That's a pleasant-sounding notion, but when we really are all in it together, when we're all responsible for each other's health, you get with that some pretty draconian restrictions on personal behavior, and I don't think that's what we want America to be about.
Well, I agree. Gene Healy, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Michael. I really appreciate being on the show.
I'll be right back. You know, recently, a former Prime Minister of England, whose name I forget, he was a cohort of Bill Clinton's. I forget his name. It's almost unimportant. He was a nonentity when he was Prime Minister, another liberal fraud, said that looking backwards, the reason that England has been suffering so many terror attacks is because they were so PC, they were afraid to say anything about the growing militancy and hatred and violence of the Muslim population. Well, my friends, there comes a time when you have to decide which side of the line you're on. You better decide right now because you're losing your country. You better decide right now. When it reaches a point like this, where the White House invites a man who glorifies the killing of cops, a man who debases the English language, a man who is as literate as they come and calls him a poet, you better decide which side of the line you're standing on. Let me take some calls. Las Vegas. Cal, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to tell you, Joseph Conrad has always been my favorite author, and that you read, you do affect people, because it's very interesting. I've been trying to write what I would have said had I not died at that moment to my children, and I'm entitling that, what I would have said had I not already
died. Oh, my God, so that's very interesting. Yeah, because in other words, before it's too late to get it out.
Exactly, and there's so many things that you have in your mind that are going to be unsaid. Even though I'm writing this, there'll be even more. And I just, I really love your show, and I love the direction that you take me in, which is very often pearls. And that's the other thing, I collect pearls in my life, And when you said the pearl, I mean, just very, very much thinking. And the other thing I wanted to agree with you, I'm a sex therapist in Vegas, and I'm finding people very uninterested in this free sex. I'm finding young men who are becoming impotent because they just don't want to have sex, but rather than say it, their body says it for them. The boredom that's creeping into sexuality, I think we're going to eventually, you know, 20, 30, 50 years really go backwards.
So you agree with me that there will be a movement towards this Victorian so-called prudishness again. I think it'll be much faster than that time frame. My guess is it's going to be within 10 years. 10 to 12 years, there's going to be an entire reversal of this libertine, anything goes, let's do it in the road, you know, and the whole sluttiness is going to come to an end as well.
I absolutely see it. My grandson is 22 years old, and he called me the other night to say he's so happy to be sleeping alone. He said, I just feel so great. I'm alone, and I feel comfortable, and I love it. He says, I'm tired of these women. And it's just not him. I mean, my patients are saying the same kind of things.
But when you're a sex therapist, what is the primary thrust of the complaints people bring to you?
Well, primarily I work with couples who are just bored with each other and trying to keep some kind of flame alive. But I also am seeing young men, and this happened interestingly in the 70s, young men who were thinking they were impotent because their body was not responded to a woman coming on to them. And they really weren't. They just were not interested, and their body was reacting rather than their mind.
Well, I remember being taught back in Psych 101 at Queens College. I had a feminist professor, only we didn't know she was a feminist because they were not so self-designated in that time. So she said to us, the human being is the only animal on earth that thinks he is in heat 365 days a year. We didn't even know what she was talking about. And she said most animals go into a sexual heat during certain periods. Period. And the other times they're not interested at all. But man is so beaten to death with advertising and popular mythology that he thinks he's supposed to be ready at a moment's notice, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And if he isn't, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, and it weighs very heavily, especially on young men and young women.
Right. And then the guy thinks he's gay. So then he goes down that road and finds out it's another false loop.
Exactly. I mean, the whole sexuality thing is so confusing and so demanding that it's not even fun anymore. And that's the problem. That's what's happening, and people are going away from it. They're really...
But a lot of people then go into internet porn. Let's be clear. It's a booming business. They give up human beings, and they become a fantasist completely. I bet you see a lot of that, too.
We live in a depersonalized, alienated world. This whole, diversity... when we came to America, when our parents came to America, we merged and we became Americans. Now we're keeping our country fractionalized. You have to keep, you know, your separate entities, your separate diversities. And instead of merging and coming together, we're all separated and alienated. And that's what
that's a little separate, I think, from the concept of sexuality, which is your specialty. Of course, the sexual mores differ by culture as well. I would suspect, though, that most of the immigrants coming into America are far more sexually constrained than the population at large. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I really do. I think they're much.
For example, African cultures are extremely restricted sexually. They're shocked by what they see here. People don't even understand that we are at the bottom of the barrel in terms of sexual behavior. Worldwide, that the very thing we think we are, we're the exact opposite. All of this libertinism is, in fact, a degeneracy of the human spirit. It's not the elevation of the human spirit. And that's all I'm saying is that at some point there's going to be a gradual. Right now I can feel the gradualness moving in the other way, but there's got to be a limit to this, and I think we bottomed out a while ago.
Yeah, I see it. I see it happening. I really do. And maybe you're right. I think maybe it will be sooner than 30, 40 years.
So why are you writing a note to your children about what I wanted to say? Why do you suspect you should? Why do you feel you should do it now?
I was thinking exactly that. There's so much unsaid and undone, and then you're dead and it's too late. So why not put something in writing? I actually have a lot of written things that I've done for them, you know, over the years that I'm going to leave them. But this is the last thing. And
you're very interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny. One of the characters in my novel says, I forget where, it's about terrorism, by the way, my novel, at the end of the day. It's a major terrorist plot that's interrupted by my hero, strangely enough. I don't want to give any more of it away. But in one of the scenes, I have one of the characters saying, for the things that he said that he wished he had not said, for the things he did that he wished he had not done, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I think that's human life. In other words, can we ever take back some of the things we said that we wish we hadn't said? Can we ever say the things that we wish we had said that we have not said? No, we can't do that.
That's the, you know, Omar Khayyam, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on, nor all the piety nor wit can move it back or cancel out a line of it. But you can give what you haven't given, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, well, you mean because there's still time. You don't have to wait for the big deathbed scene. Let's not get too depressed right now, Cal. Thanks.